about personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petso Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petso, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Petso Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Petso.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Money Matters. I'm Dave Petso, of course, and this is a recording here. I will be live in the second hour, so look forward to visiting with you then and taking your questions. And we have got several email questions for this week, so it'll be an enjoyable and fast second hour. So stay tuned for that. But right now, I'm very pleased to welcome back John Deal, who's been, I think, John, you've been here a couple of times for us. And John's with the MIT lab and the aging lab. And so that's always interesting to me to what you guys are working on and what you're talking about. So MIT is also, of course, a bunch of brainiacs you guys are. And what are you guys working on? Because so many things are have to be happening with aging. I just everything you read, the science, are just pushing back the boundaries of aging. And so share with us what you guys are working on right now.
Sure, Dave. Well, thanks. And, you know, as I think about the studies that the folks at the MIT Age Lab are doing, and one of the roles with the company I work with, Hartford Funds, is to kind of define that research. And one of the things we see changing is just changes brought about by extending longevity. So today in the United States, for example, if I have two people, age 65 and married, there is now, it's what we call the rule of 63-36. There's a 63% chance that one of the two will live to age 90, and there's a 36% chance that one of the two will live to age 95. And I probably don't have to share with the ladies who that is likely to be.
Right.
But given that kind of longevity, as we think about traditional quote-unquote retirements compared to what retirements will be in the future, it's not just that we're living longer. We'll be living better given medical advances, given new technologies and devices that will help us age. And so we're studying the impact of longer life on industries, companies, services, products, all the kind of things that we're going to desire as we move forward.
Right. Now, one of the things that pops up all the time when we're talking to clients, right, just day to day, is, I don't want to live to be 100. But yet we see a lot of people that are, and we're just, the science is, of course, it's unbelievable how long people are going to be living, and the boundaries just keep getting pushed back. People say that, but the reality is people seem to fight for every last breath, don't they?
It's true. No one wants to live until 100, until you're 99 and a half, right?
So right.
It varies all the way. We always joke and say, how old is old? It typically is about 3 years older than I am right now.
That's right.
But the interesting thing is, because we're living so much longer, it's changing the conversation around how we're going to be living, and it actually changes some of the questions that we should be asking ourselves, either about ourselves or about a loved one that we care about.
Mm-hmm.
And these questions aren't necessarily restricted to the financial markets, if you will. They all have financial ties, but sometimes they're not directly about portfolio allocations or income streams.
Right. Then, of course, a lot of people, when they come in and visit with us, they want to talk about the financial aspect because, frankly, that's the easy part, isn't it?
It is.
That's the easy discussion. We could run mathematical formulas to say you can retire. But then people walk into retirement, and they're really not emotionally ready to retire, losing a circle of friends and all those types of things. So let's kind of maybe focus today on that. That's probably a better discussion with you anyway, is are those more difficult types of decisions that people make? What along those same lines, when you're talking about it, you talk about like who's going to change our light bulbs and things like that.
Sure.
Why don't you share some of your interesting thoughts you guys are working on?
Sure. So I'll talk about a couple of questions. The MIT Age Lab says there are three questions we should be asking ourselves that are predictive of a future quality of life. But I just want to bring up for a second, because you actually mentioned it, this whole concept of work. You know, we asked about 30,000 Americans all across the United States four questions. We asked them the year of their birth, their zip code, because from zip code you can get all the socioeconomic data that you need, their gender, and then importantly, tell me two things that you envision doing after age 65. And if you're already 65, just bump it out a couple more years. And your audience may find it interesting. Travel obviously came up quite a bit.
Sure.
Most post-retirees tell us they travel, but not as much as they thought they would prior to retirement. But interesting, what popped into the conversation was work, but not work in the same form or fashion as the first 20 or 30 years. Maybe working for a nonprofit or working for a cause I believe in or working part-time. And it's not necessarily only financial in nature. For many of us, work is our primary social contact with other folks.
Right.
And the problem we face today is that if we retire in our early 60s, maybe it takes us two or three years to start knocking some of those things off our bucket list. Mm-hmm. But now we have 18 years that we need to fill with
what?
Right. So the three questions that are predictive of future quality of life, they're kind of lighthearted in a way, but they bring serious issues. One question is, who will change your light bulbs? It deals with the normal housing and maintenance issues that many of us will face as we age. The average American home was built in 1975, and it is aging as well as its occupants. How many of us have spent even 30 or 40 minutes thinking about the services or modifications that may need to be made to our homes in order to make them livable into our mid-80s or mid-90s? These are the kind of things that never matter until they matter. And yes, they have financial implications. And I always tell folks, it's better to think about it and perhaps plan for it as we look ahead. Things like handyman services, things like home modification, for example, level entryways, wider doorways, kitchen and bath improvements to make things easier to reach, so on and so forth. By the way, all the top 10 home improvements meant to prevent one thing in the home. Falling.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because a fall can change the picture in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And so as we think about these kind of things, the other thing that we need to think about, Dave, is that many of the tradespeople that we've relied on, electricians and roofers and plumbers, one of the aspects of aging is that those people that we've relied on for all those years may begin to age out of the professions.
Right.
And so the people we've relied on may need to be replaced. How do we begin to form trusted relationships with service providers that, again, will help us stay in our home if that's our desire?
It's an interesting point. You think about how I own the building that we're in and how we take up half the building, but it's amazing how much other little work there is, right? A light goes out. Now I need an electrician, or I need to learn to change a ballast myself. So all of these decisions, you're trying to find people that you are comfortable with. I've had that building for 2 years. I finally found an electrician that actually showed up.
That's right.
Because they don't always show up.
That's right.
You think people want work, and then but they sometimes don't show up. So it is a very interesting point. I want to dive into this a little bit deeper because I am seeing a lot of this planning forward with my clients.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing it. So somewhere the word is getting out, because people who are still getting around, or when they move, they build homes to grow old in.
Right.
Right?
For sure.
Which, to your point, wide doorways, a bathtub they can get in and out of if they're disabled.
Even taking an honest look at your housing and saying, look, I can tell you, in the home that I live in Pennsylvania, all the bedrooms on the second floor, all the bathrooms on the second floor. As my wife and I considered where we would be longer term, as much as we love the home we're in, it was clear to us it was not going to accommodate us as we age. And we need to be thinking now about a lifespan that is going to cover to age 85, 90, 95 years old. The home that served us well in one stage of our life may not be the home or even the housing arrangement. What we're seeing now is perhaps you see them in this area, Dave, where these giant multiplexes are popping up. There's movie theaters and retailers and restaurants. And if you look really closely, what else is there? Condominium units, right, that aren't being purchased by college kids. They're being bought by folks age 50 to 70 who say, you know what, I love this area, but 3 months of the year, I'm going to be either chasing my grandchildren or chasing my dreams. And it's kind of a nice idea to be able to think about turning out the lights, locking the door, and disappearing for 3 months, showing up 3 months later, unlock the door, turn the lights on, and it looks exactly like it looked when I left. And by the way, when I'm there, it's got everything that I need. There are restaurants and entertainment, people around day and night. I mean, it's this is kind of the new phase that we're looking at in terms of socializing as we get older.
Yeah, interesting, interesting. Now, let's go on to the second one, and that's who we're going to have lunch with, right?
So who we're going to have lunch with deals with your social network and not just the one online, like the one where we meet real people and have real conversations.
Do people have those?
Believe it or not, they still do.
Wow.
I think they become even more important as we age, believe it or not.
The only ones I see with those relationships are older people, actually, right? The youngsters are texting each other as they sit across the room.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And one of the keys to that is your social network will do two really important things for you. It's your social network that will get you up off the couch, out the door, and physically moving, giving you a place to be and a place to go. And secondly, it's your social network that will keep you mentally stimulated and challenged with new people, relationships, and opportunities.
Right. Now, that it seems so very popular. I run into this with clients because we talk about this on a financial basis. It's always smarter to go rent that winter home. You have to worry about it, you have to upkeep, and so on. But they miss community. Those people that actually have a place, they go down to Palm Springs, whatever, wherever it is, they move into the same people, and they have this huge social circle. Huge. In fact, their social circle there is multiples what it is here.
Right.
Because this is where they have a good social circle, yes, but not like there where all they're doing is playing.
Right, right.
Right? So you think about that, and people are willing to spend great amounts of money to create that social network.
Well, and the other thought is we think about who we're going to age with and what we're going to be doing. Let's say that you are a successful small business owner or, whatever your career, you were very successful in it. And then one day you say, that's it, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, what does a Tuesday look like 2 years from now?
Right.
What do we fill our time with? And what we find is many people do find causes that they believe in to become attached to. Now, the big thing that people want in those retirement years is time flexibility. I want to be able to do the things I want to do when I can do them. But if I can contribute to a cause, if I can give my efforts, remember, donation is more than just money. It's time and talent as well. And what's interesting is what people often want to hear about is, what are other people like me doing?
Mm-hmm.
What are other people who we see who are successful, what are they doing to fill that time? How are they leveraging the skills and the talents that they've accumulated over a lifetime? And because let's face it, when we're 65, 70, 75 years old, the difference today is that you're going to remain energetic, you're going to remain productive, and society needs a lot of the skills that exist out there today. How are we going to get involved? Because maintaining that social network is crucially important.
And continuing to have a sense of purpose, right?
Absolutely.
Church, something.
Yes, and that again, whether it's a faith community, whether it's hobbies or entertainment or even education. Like I think if anyone is involved in the higher education, you may find that one of the fastest growing segments of enrollees at colleges and universities is your above age 50 segment. And they're not enrolling for degree programs. They're enrolling in classes that interest them that maybe didn't align with their professional choices earlier in their career, so on and so forth.
Right, right. Good, good. I think about this and use this analogy with my clients a lot, and I wondered what your thoughts were about this. I like to play golf, so but I don't want to play every day, right? I don't. I would be very boring. But men typically, when they get to retirement, they go, again, it's just a financial thing. And so I use this analogy, and I say, look, you get four guys that go to show up on the first tee, and they don't know each other. By the second, third hole, each one of those guys knows what the other person either did for a living or does. Now, we don't care how many kids you have or what's going on there. Women are the opposite, right? They're going to be all about their family and their circle. My kids and my kids are doing this. Typically. Now, what do men do? They don't, if we don't address that issue on a mental basis, you are now retiring from where you gather all of your identity.
Absolutely.
Into what?
You
need to find a new identity, don't you?
That's the question. That's exactly right. And again, it is so different given that longevity that we spoke about earlier. Because I have an opportunity in my second 30 years to create something very different than I did in my first 40 or 50 years. And so, what will that be and what will be important and how can I feel like I'm contributing and a part of something? That's often how we define ourselves through the careers that we built to the point of quote-unquote retirement. But interestingly, the word retire is kind of disappearing from our dialogue, and people are more and more starting to talk about what's next.
It needs to disappear because people are living so long, and we can't just be sitting around or, frankly, playing golf every day and having cocktails all afternoon and then take a nap and who knows, right?
Yes.
Watch TV. That doesn't sound like much of a life.
No. In fact, I sat next to a gentleman on an airplane not long ago who told me that he tried to retire two or three times. But the first time he thought he would play golf 3 days a week. But as it turned out, he said, you know, I wound up in the 19th hole watching Oprah for 2 hours a day. Said 2 years of that, I'll get anybody back working again.
Yeah, it turned you into something you don't want to be. All right, we got to take a quick break, John, and we'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. AIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello and welcome to Money Matters. I'm Dave Petzo. This is a special recording. And, again, I'm here with John Deal, who's been with MIT's Aging Lab. And just enjoy you coming through and spending some time and just telling us what the cutting edge is, because that cutting edge is just changing all the time. It's I've enjoyed and shared with this audience for the last couple of years about a book that really caught my attention called Abundance, and it talks so much about, and got to see the gentleman speak and kind of update it as well. But the technology and how exponential it's changing our lives, and not just technology that, we're living longer, but we're living longer exponentially. We're not people who are retiring today. Well, we have a 30-year life expectancy based on yesterday or today's science, which is getting these numbers are going to be changing as we go. All those implications in society, we think financial because we can run the numbers and say we're all going to die. We don't have enough money and all those things. But it brings up some very interesting things, and that's what you guys are doing, right? And in the first segment, we talked about maintaining our homes and what that's going to look like long term, what our social circle looks like. What's the third thing, the third big question you all are talking about?
So the third question, Dave, is how will we get an ice cream cone? And when I say that, it's really two questions built into one. The first question is, do you even like ice cream? Here's what I want you to think about. What are those small things that make life worth living that as you age, you want to make sure to maintain access to? And the reason we ask this, and by the way, they usually have something to do with these four categories. Usually has something to do with where we were educated. That could be college or university, could be armed services, could be vocational training. But that's a big part of our identity and maybe a big part of our social circle. Where do I recreate? What do I like to do? Where do I congregate with other people? And where do I donate? Both not just money, but also time and talent. So educate, recreate, congregate, and donate. If I think about those things, it's probably going to begin to define those things I want to remain attached to as I age. And the reason we ask the question the way we do, how will you get an ice cream cone, is that the one factor here that everybody seems to take for granted until we are faced with it face-to-face is our ability to drive, our ability to access these things that are so important to us. So as we start to think about where we're going to age and how we're going to age, we need to begin to think about the things that energize us that we need to maintain access to. And oftentimes I'm asked, because the MIT Age Lab and actually our parent company, the Hartford Insurance Company, has done a lot of work on aging drivers. And driving is something that doesn't matter until it matters.
Right.
And maybe to ease into this whole topic of what if I'm never able to drive? Well, what if instead I live in a community where driving is a luxury, not a necessity? And, Dave, I would share with you some of the fastest-growing populations of Americans age 65-plus in the United States are forming around college and university environments.
Interesting.
They have culture. They have sports. They also, though, generally have better-developed health networks, teaching hospitals, clinics, and the like. And if they don't have walkable access to a lot of the things we want to enjoy, they oftentimes have better systems of public transportation, which may allow us to access those things in some way should we lose the ability to drive. So, again, another piece of the puzzle is, where do I want to age? And will I have access to the people and the things that energize me?
Right. Now, if you live in a more rural area, and of course Boise's not that, but Idaho is that, on the outskirts, what are folks doing in those communities to address some of these issues? Or are they just do their best and get by like they have for years? Is there anything happening in more rural areas?
In the rural areas, I think we need to look more for the senior support services that are available in those areas. But to be honest with you, David, it is a challenge because Idaho is not alone. The majority of Americans still live in rural locations. And if we have an opportunity and if we have time on our side to begin to think about what it looks like, and maybe I'm not always tied to the home that I'm in, if relocation is a possibility at some point in the future, it's something that does need to be considered. But more often than not, it's seeking out the transportation services in particular that can help me access some of those things that I may need. Or, as we talked about earlier, the trusted service providers, be they caregiving services, be they handyman services, so on and so forth, that can help us get by.
You know, it strikes me in some of these communities where you see it even in Boise, in the hospitals where they've got, you know, an eye from some location in Boise, but that eye is also can be turned on while you're up in some of the remote areas. For us, it'd be like a council where they have a small hospital, but there's no way they can fully staff with expertise and heart surgeons and things like that, so they can monitor and do that. I would assume on a medical basis that that's just going to continue to become better and better remote services for those communities.
Very much so, and I would also say that as we live and age in our homes, we're going to find that the number of devices that are used in the home, devices used now, I carefully use the word monitor, but there are some cases where if we're living alone in a more rural location, we have family somewhere, I'm not going to say right down the road, but maybe within proximity if we need them. Well, you know, it's kind of moving past the pressing the alert button.
Right.
We need things in our homes that are going to detect our activity or perhaps even detect a fall in the home to let someone know that something's going on needs to be checked out. So, yes, those kind of interactive services, not only in the medical field but also within the home, I think are going to become a bigger and bigger deal.
Well, just as we're talking, just, you know, what, this week, 2 days ago, Apple unveils its watch, which we all, you know, can't even imagine what it'll be looking like 4 or 5 years from now, but already you'll be with that. They announced all kinds of new medical technology that's going to be hooked to it, monitoring for heart, falls, all those things, all with just a watch. And
being able to anticipate medical conditions before they actually happen to us that can be analyzed by our doctors or our adult caregivers, absolutely, I think, the wave of the future.
Yeah, I mean, imagine that your watch goes out, your alarm goes off. Oh, it's not waking me up. It's telling me I could be having a heart problem.
Right. Yeah, something is going on out of the ordinary based on my typical pattern of living. These are the kind of things that we may be able to sense ahead of time moving forward.
Right, and again, exponentially, we're going to get better and better and better at this. I found that very interesting, as an aside, one of the more interesting things about the whole watch announcement was the new integrating of all the healthcare that they're doing. I can't remember what they called that, but
and is it a medical device or is it a
It's a collaboration.
Those are the questions that we're wrestling with, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, it'd be fascinating. All right. Well, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about more on the technology side, and also looking at how far out this technology maybe pushing the boundaries of life expectancies and things like that. So, anyway, we're here with John Deal, and we got to take a break here for Fox News. Hope you'll stick around, and we'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, and welcome back to Money Matters. I'm Dave Petzo here with John Deal, who is with the MIT Aging Lab and also the Hartford Funds, Hartford Insurance Company. And so you travel around the country and talk with various people about what's going on in the world of aging, which is a fascinating discussion to me because on our side of things, it's twofold. We're obviously trying to bring peace, financial peace, to people in a very unpeaceful world. So I want to talk about two aspects of that in your studies, and that is how do people in such a fast-paced world, how do seniors slow down enough to not be overwhelmed by the fire hose of data that comes at them every single day? They're not used to it. You know, we grew up with a newspaper on the porch, and before that, people hardly ever cared that much, right? And I always like to give out this little tidbit, but, you know, the nightly news was 15 minutes until Watergate. 15 mm-hmm. minutes. Mm-hmm. We didn't talk financial news 24/7 and worry about our pile of money. So let's talk a little bit about that, as far as that goes, and technology and how that's impacting people.
Sure, Dave. So if we think about it, while we're living longer, our time horizons are actually shortening. I mean, for many people, long term now, it's hard to think past next year.
Right.
You know, long term used to be 10 years, 15 years. Not anymore, because we live in a society where now information is ubiquitous, and by that it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be on the nightly news, as you mentioned, or in the morning newspaper. But now it's on our desktop, it's in our pocket, it's on our wrist, we're surrounded by it. And today's consumer, especially the aging consumer, is now faced with what we call an increasing volume, velocity, and complexity of issues, which is really making it hard to make decisions. And let me explain a little bit about what I mean by that. The volume of issues that we face. We may now be living in four-generation households, and perhaps providing care both up and down the generational spectrum. In other words, we may be caring for aging parents at the same time as we're raising grandchildren, sometimes even in our own homes.
Right.
The volume of those issues and the number of things that we have to think about on a daily basis and manage on a daily basis, from our work to our family to our faith, obviously you can fill in those bubbles. It's exploding. Add to that the velocity at which it's coming at us. Dave, I always like to ask, what year did people think that the Apple iPhone was introduced into the U.S. market? It was January of 2007. Technology's only been around 7 or 8 years, and yet it's changed everything from the way we communicate to the way we gather information, we evaluate products and services. And what was every technological innovation since the washing machine going to do for us? It was going to create all this leisure time that we would have to contemplate and think about what the future would look like. And is that what happened? No, we've just put more and more and more into our days. And then lastly, compounded by the complexity in the world in which we live today. By complexity, I always like to say, just when you thought you knew all the answers, they changed the questions, right? Just when you thought your blood pressure was in a manageable range, they changed the standard.
Mm-hmm.
You learned how to eat my food pyramid. It's not a food pyramid. It's my plate. So new research brings, is it healthy to drink coffee, red wine, or you name it? Or is it not healthy? It changes on a daily basis.
Yep.
And so the amount of information that we're now inundated with has actually made it harder to make decisions. In fact, this is one of the reasons I'm sure, Dave, you see, but I see that folks want to talk to financial advisors, for example, because there are headlines barraging us constantly. How do I cut through the clutter and determine what is really important to me? I can get all worked up about whatever today's headlines are, but what impact at the end of the day did they really have on me, my portfolio, and what it is that I'm trying to accomplish in my life? I think sometimes we can lose perspective. Mm-hmm. Remember that most crises pass in the United States because today's crisis is replaced by tomorrow's crisis, which oftentimes is more personal and puts things in better perspective than what we were worried about yesterday. So yes, that all that taking shape, and then we add to that, how will technology, you asked about technology, how will it impact the way we live? Well, technological advances from disease management to wearables, whether those are wearable undergarments or watches or wristbands or whatever they may be, all meant to monitor kind of how we're doing,
mm-hmm.
will drastically change. Not to mention some of the advances. I think I read an article just within the last month or two that the first prosthetics were being developed, which actually can be controlled by the mind, nerve impulses that are passed from the brain into these, the quality of life that we'll be able to experience an improvement in.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps you've read, I think there are a couple of companies out there trying to develop a smart contact lens that would measure the blood glucose in your body through the tear fluid in your eye, transmit it to your your phone or your watch or whatever, so that you can more accurately monitor. Look, if you were managing a chronic disease like diabetes, the quality of life that you may be able to improvement that you could experience wearing a contact lens versus taking four or five needle sticks a day, you're going to want that technology. But from a financial standpoint, it's important to understand all of this that we talked about does eventually branch back to the financial.
Right.
Because many of those new technologies, my guess is, they're not going to be paid for by social insurance.
Right.
They'll need to be paid for out of pocket. And so when we talk to our financial advisors, thinking about the need for growth in a portfolio, thinking about limiting volatility because I'm never quite sure where I'm going to need them, when and where I'll need that money, these are all the underlying considerations that go hand in hand with kind of creating that ideal picture of the future.
You know, it brings up an interesting point. We tell people that we need to, nowadays, be setting aside a pool of money for you and your family. Let's just pretend it's $50,000 to pay for when you have an eye problem. They put in a brand new eye. It's, you know, some kind of bionic eye. Things like that that will not, clearly can't be. Whether we like Obamacare or don't, government care everywhere always is rationed. I have to assume it's going to therefore be the case here as well. And if people are 85, 90 years old and want these things, well, I'm sorry, you're not part of the hive anymore. You're not a worker bee. Do you guys, you touched on that, and I just wanted to run it by. Do you feel that, there's going to be many of these things on the healthcare side that people are going to have to pay for them by themselves?
Just a personal opinion, yeah, Dave, I do. Because, again, these technologies and therapeutic treatments are so, they're all developing. And even when we think about care options for dementia, Alzheimer's, so on and so forth, I think the numbers are getting close to, for Americans 85 and older, the incidence of Alzheimer's is now approaching 40%. 40% of us, if we're fortunate enough to make it to those ages, well, what are the technologies? What are the treatment centers? What are the options to help families cope with that disease? And I've been touched with that by that disease in my own family, and surely that there are financial issues from caregiving and devices, so on and so forth, but they pale in comparison many times to the emotional burden that the caregiver will be dealing with.
They are big issues. There's no doubt about that. Fortunately, medicine is making great strides these days. And so hopefully by the time we get there, John, we'll be able to take a pill and not have that happen.
That would sure would be nice.
If we, I agree. God willing, get to be that old. But it is a frightening concept for a lot of people. But medicine has come a great deal. It's getting closer all the time.
For sure. I mean, mapping the human genome, right? And the biological revolution, treatments for new types of cancers where the body's cells are being reprogrammed to fight those cancers internally. Immuno-oncology is what it's called. It's just it's a fascinating new area of study, and I think we've just begun to scratch the surface.
It's crazy. It really is. It's crazy how technology has advanced. And like you just pointed out, this is less than 10 years old, the iPhone, for crying out loud. It's just amazing, just amazing. All right, we've got to take a quick break. Final segment upcoming. We'll talk some more about health and what's going on with the aging lab.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. With Dave Pezzo on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello and welcome to Money Matters. I'm Dave Pezzo, of course, and I'm here with John Deal. This is a recording. I will be right after this segment here. I'll be live with you, so hang on to your questions. But always, when you're coming through town, we just love to have you on and see what's going on at the Aging Lab at MIT. Now, we've talked about the technology. We've talked about who changes your light bulbs, how you maintain, where you're going to live as you get older. I want to talk about the generational differences, how people communicate with their grandchildren. And you got to get on social media. I know. I got a flip phone. I don't ever want to text. Blah, blah, blah. Then you will not communicate with your great-grandchildren or your grandchildren.
You know, Dave, it's funny. People say that this generation is probably the least communicative of any generation. The digital natives who won't know what the world was like without an internet. I would almost argue the other way in saying they may be one of the most communicative, but they do it in a different way. And mm-hmm. the different generations and the way that generations approach technology and the way we develop trust. Interestingly, MIT says the MIT Age Lab says it may have a lot to do with what's called cohort theory. And what cohort theory says is a lot of who we are in terms of, you know, the cars we like to drive, the music we prefer, the what's cheap, what's expensive, we're all formed between the ages of approximately 17 and 22 years old. If we want to understand what has really shaped our worldview in terms of trust or economic outlook, so on and so forth, we can think to those formative years, and we can think to what the economy was like, how it impacted our families, what we're afraid of now because of what was going on during those years, and especially important, what were the technologies that were in use at the time? So when we think today about people in their 70s and 80s, coming of age in I'll call it the golden period of the American experience, victory in World War II, GI Bill, families growing, education growing, trust in the United States never higher. Mm-hmm. What you find is every successive generation thereafter comes with lower and lower trust levels in all areas of trust, government, corporate America, experts, celebrities. In fact, if you were around the 1960s, remember that popular slogan, trust no one over 30?
Right.
Now that we're all over 30, we've just truncated it to trust no one.
Yeah.
But there is still one group that we do still trust, and it's other people like me, right? So if I can learn from other people like me, and this is where I would say for people who are aging, who aren't used to these new technologies, you know, try and latch on to someone who is using the technology. Just understand how they're using it. Somebody who bought a new iPad, someone who just learned to text. Because honestly, and I can tell you in my own experience, I have three children. And if their grandparents are going to wait for us to bring them over for the typical traditional family meal on Sunday,
yeah,
probably isn't going to happen. Because believe it or not, in order to play in those baseball games and soccer games and all the things that we did as kids, they're now taking up all of the time on the weekends. And so what we find is if you want to be a part of that generation, we kind of have to go where they are.
Yeah.
We have to go to the dance recitals and the you name it. But that's changing. And if we don't adopt the technology that they're using, we run the risk of being a little less relevant. And that's why we've got to understand how they're doing what they're doing.
Yeah, and it is. We just have different things. People don't have books anymore. They've got readers and iPads, and that's where you get a lot of stuff. And I was pleased to recently, get onto Facebook. Well, I don't take selfies and post that I'm now having talking with you, and I'm trying hard to Twitter and all these things because that's what you should be doing to communicate. But at least I can go on. I don't have to say a lot, but I can go see my brand new grandbaby.
Yeah.
And I can see 16 pictures a day, right? Because they're, there, she's really cute this way when she sleeps and that way and all that. But you really feel much more connected if you're not on there.
And you can use a technology like Twitter to follow, if you will, people that you find interesting that maybe that it can be a source of new ideas, new, experiences, so on and so forth. It connects us with other people like us, which is who we tend to trust.
Now, that brings up an interesting thing because, okay, so maybe this is a little out of the area, but I just want to spitball with me a little bit here. So we're connecting only with people that think the way I do. Isn't that going to make a smaller world ultimately? John?
Yes and no. It is. And where you see it most effectively used, Dave, is in media, right? Because
right.
we used to have, three channels, two
yep.
channels, whatever it was. Now we find so many media outlets that are tailored to the way that we think. I do think that we do have to make an effort at least to expose ourselves to ideas on the other side of the fence.
Yep.
Look, at the end of the day, we may disagree.
Yeah.
But perhaps in there we understand a little bit more about why we feel the way we do, or every once in a while,
right.
we may figure out that we don't have it all figured out. Maybe there's a better idea out there.
Right, right. Well, it just strikes me that you can tailor your news down to the point that all you're doing is having confirmation bias, that in fact, yes, the world is going to end, and I can prove it right here.
Yeah, and that's same with our social networks. Getting in amongst people that think differently than we do is actually kind of energizing.
Yep.
And exposes us to new ideas.
Yeah, it's very, very, very true. All right, let's talk about another thing that's kind of popping up here. Artificial intelligence is making some pretty amazing inroads. I just saw this. I just saw a taping that's so 2 years ago now. But these were the two greatest Jeopardy champions got whacked by a computer. I mean, it wasn't even close,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw this, and this is 2 years ago. Imagine how well, what is it, Watson? Is that the computer
right.
at IBM?
Right.
I think they call it Watson. How good Watson's going to play it now. So they can't, the great Jeopardy champions, very complex.
Misha's RV presents the Insane Inflatable 5K, May 2nd at Expo Idaho. It's the newest fun run sweeping the nation. Climb up 6 stories to the top of Vertigo and then fly back down on a huge 4-lane slide. Best of all, the Insane Inflatable 5K benefits St. Luke's Children's Hospital. And Stinker has an insane offer. Fill up with Stinker Dino Care top-tier fuel at any Sinclair Stinker store and get 10% off your registration. Get details and get registered at InsaneInflatable5K.com.
Grammy Award-winning Chris Botti, live in concert. April 12th, 7 p.m., the Morrison Center. The highly acclaimed Chris Botti, backed by his incredible band. Tickets on sale now at the Morrison Center box office, morrisoncenter.com, or 426-1110. It's one unbelievable night with Chris.
Hello and welcome to hour number two of Money Matters. And, of course, these are my opinions and my opinions only. We are live this hour. So do ring us up at 580-5436-580-KIDO. We're not here to tell you what to buy or sell. That's crazy talk. And if you follow that advice, then you trade out of great companies that may take a minor dip and then explode to all-time highs. If you listen to all of the news all the time, well, you're out. You've been out. The only time I remember, literally, in my 30-plus years, that the news was good, most of the news was good, would be 1999. Seriously. Only at extremes. Only at real extremes of high prices do we find even a hint of optimism, general optimism about the market. But we're constantly being bombarded, constantly, by David Stockton says this. He's a former budget director, so he must now be a soothsayer. He can now see the future clearly. I can't. Warren Buffett can't. Michael Price, Peter Lynch, they can't. But he can. Or some guy about the three blood moons, or maybe there's four this year. I don't know what it is. Honestly, I don't even know what they're doing, except it's a bad thing. But apparently, he can see the future. Now, all the investment greats can't, but they can. And when we listen to this stuff, it drives us to make terrible investment decisions. Last week we talked about benign neglect, right? Benign neglect. What is that? What does that look like? And I want to talk about it today, part two. What does that mean, benign neglect? Favorably neglecting your investments. Now, when we favorably neglect our investments, we just don't go in with the idea that we're going to win the very second we make an investment. We just give it a chance. Give it some time. We relax about life. We enjoy our life. We just don't have to be fussed about every little hiccup move in the market. Because it isn't have anything to do with a 30-year retirement that needs a rising stream of income in order to have a stable lifestyle. Absolutely nothing to do with it. This quarter's results have zero to do with your long-term investment security. None. Absolutely none. And this day's return, this week's return, none. Trading in and out of a great corporation, like, say, Apple, well, you're out. Gone. Dozens of points ago. Billions in market cap ago. But you got, you know, some action in the game. So if you like action, then trading probably makes a lot of sense. If you don't want to go see your grandkids or play around the golf or hang out at the soccer field. It doesn't mean you put your head in the sand and never do anything. It does mean we don't overdo. Remember last week I shared the study by Fidelity of their best investors, right? Are they the PhDs? Are they people age 60 to 70? Are they the wealthy? Of course they are, because we have to quote what the billionaires are doing. Billionaire Joe Schmo is now buying biotech. Okay, so I guess I better buy biotech because billionaire Joe Schmo is, you know, he has $1 billion. I realize he did that building up a computer business, but it must be smart, so I'm going to follow Joe Schmo into whatever. It's not him. It's the people that forgot they had an account. They didn't know. So they weren't driven to change course. They just kept their investment. And they were the best investors of all. This week I tweeted out a tweet by Pascal. Man's miseries are derived from his inability to sit still in a quiet room alone. Man's miseries are derived from his inability to sit still in a quiet room alone. Can't we just stop sometimes and think and reflect? Or do we always have to be inputting as much noise as we can? Again, you know, I don't think it's information. I think it's data. That's all it is. Just boom. Let's input some more data because we don't really have any context to put it in, so it can't possibly be information. It certainly is not knowledge if you don't have the ability to take that data and play with it. And it's far from wisdom. So is it what we should do is to just grab as much data as possible? Just open up the floodgates. Give me some more blogs. Give me some more online stuff. Give me some more TV. And open it up. Is it helpful for us to try to gain a long-term perspective to watch a lightning round? I wonder if we should buy, and sell, this. Or listen to people talk about technical indicators. Because this 20-minute line crossed the 50-day line in some whatever pattern they're looking for to signify the end of the world, end of the market world. Does that help, you think? Does it help you to be rational? It doesn't help me. Not at all. How can I be rational if I'm buying and selling? Do I have time for thought? No. I don't. When the greatest investors of our lifetimes are long-term, thoughtful, owning corporations, buying businesses, not trading. I mean, that's what they all do. All of them. Why would I want to break that mold? So I think we really do have to have this benign neglect, right? We have to not succumb to this. We do have to learn to sit still in a quiet room all alone. Turn it off, turn it down, dial it back. I'm calling in today from Seattle, where I will be from time to time because this is where my relatively new and my first grandbaby lives. And I got to tell you, there's not a lot of action going on here. I mean, she coos now, as she does. I mean, she's so cute, it's ridiculous. I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous. Those of you grandparents out there, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's very special. It's very special. And then when she smiles at you, it's killer. But that's the day. And it's the most important part of my life. Right? It's not what to buy and sell. It doesn't mean you don't do your job. But isn't that the truth of all of our lives? It's not about what's going on in the news. It's not about trying to figure out the future because you can't. It doesn't mean we really do neglect, but we do it benignly. We do it with purpose, with good intention. A good intention neglect, if you will. This doesn't sound as good as benign neglect, right? It's not a catchphrase. How do we be patient in an impatient world? How do we think when everybody wants us to be thoughtlessly in action, in motion? How do we? We can only do it with intention. That's it. If we are not intent on doing that, if we're not intent on sitting on our hands, we won't. It's not our natural state. It's not our natural state to sit and contemplate. It's not. The faster the world goes, the more we go with it. We hurry up, get up. We hurry up and rush. We don't stop and think. We don't stop and contemplate. We certainly don't want once we get going, right? So many people do, of course, have a little quiet time in the morning. But is that what you do after? Are you quiet through the day? Are you thoughtful? Can we stop with our investments chasing and running? And I certainly think we can. But we can't do it naturally. We have to be thoughtful about it. We have to plan. This is who I am. This is what I am. Not all investments work. They don't. Get over it. You know, market went down. I don't know why I didn't get out. I do, because you didn't know it was going to go down. Well, my broker or my advisor should know. No, he doesn't know. Doesn't know. Nobody knows. Well, it's pretty obvious with the housing downturn. This was obvious. Yeah, it is in hindsight. You're right. It is. Looking back, it's totally obvious. I'm pretty sure. I don't know why you didn't just put it all in long, 30-year U.S. Treasuries. Pretty sure I don't know why. In hindsight, we didn't all do that. But we really can't see the future. And so when we go around asking that question all the time, again, it leads us to shorter and shorter term thinking. And we get back to overtrading and underperforming. It's what investors do best. One more thought on this, and I'll let it go. Well, I'll let it go for a little while, anyway. 20 years of, generally speaking, bull markets. You know, it's not been the best 20 years, no doubt. That was 1980 to 2000, right? The S&P 500 averaged a little bit below its long-term average. about a little over 9%, not quite 10, for the last 20 years. Okay? Now, just as kind of a, if you will, the bogey, three-year treasury bill, three-month treasury bills, did a whopping, you know, 3%. We all know interest rates are low. By the way, treasury bills for the next 20 years will not do that well. I really don't think they can, coming off of near zero, right? So that number keeps going down, but let's call it 3%. Inflation ran just below that. Now, we have to have, we've got to at least get inflation, right? You know the average investor, this is a money measured by money in and out of funds, right? In and out of funds over the last 20 years, market is over 9%. It's okay. Two worst bear markets of your life are in there. That's pretty good. Actually, I'll take 9 with the two worst bear markets of my life. The average investor, because we outfoxed ourselves, right? The average investor did worse than three-month treasury bills. They did worse than 3%. The average investor tied inflation. Just over 2% the average investor made in the last 20 years. Now, do you suppose that they picked the wrong mutual funds as an example? That was the problem? That they rode through the downturns, that was the problem? Well, of course not. They were clever. They were smart. They were plugged in, wired in, and knew what they should be doing all the time. Just over 2%. In a 9% world, equaled only inflation, performed worse in cash in the lowest interest rate environment in our life. Crazy, isn't it? Crazy. So when we talk about this, it's not because you just put it in and you know, because it's some theory. Just leave it alone. It's because it works. And nothing else does. But you can't do it without intention. Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net, PETSO.net, if you prefer email. Give us a call, and we'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. This is Money Matters with Dave Petso on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello and welcome back, and thank you again for joining us. Our number is 580-5436. That's 580-KIDO, Dave at PetsoFinancial.net if you prefer email. Let's go to Jim. Jim, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Morning, Dave. What's happening?
Good. How are you doing? I'm up here enjoying my beautiful granddaughter.
So she's cooing, eh?
Yeah, she is. She's probably genius level, I'm pretty sure.
Are you sure she's not a bird?
I'm pretty sure.
Cooing, you know. I was just wondering, like, kind of a comment. You know, you mentioned the phrase, the misery of man is not knowing how to sit quietly in a room by himself. Well, anyway, back in the 50s when I was a kid, my parents got me this book, and it was called How to Do Nothing with Nobody All Alone by Yourself, and it was how to make little toys.
Yeah.
And I still got that book. I mean, it was pretty cool.
That is really cool. That's fantastic, yes. I just really enjoyed that quote this week. It just struck me. It was what we were talking about last week, and I thought, well, I've got to mention that one again
it did not come with batteries.
No.
I'm able to read it without having to turn it on or whatever, or click on or something like that.
I'm surprised you were able to. It was able to hold your attention for more than a second.
Well, I don't know. It's just, you know, like I say, it's just, well, you know, but one of the problems with technology is it zaps our imagination, except for the computer programmers, you know.
Right.
So anyway, I mean, people are just, you know, when you listen to a radio program, you use your imagination. When you watch TV, you don't. And then
That's
it got
right.
worse from there, but.
I think so. I agree. You know, a year ago, my good friend John Duane passed away, and I have reflected on it a lot the past couple of weeks because I knew it was, you know, that time. And it's just it's amazing. We talk all the time about how radio was so cool and so fun to do. And it was, and it is, because you do, you have to paint a picture. You have to get your creativity going, and or the audience is just left with hearing words, not pictures. And you do. You have to try to bring those to life. And he was brilliant at it. And just doing newscasts and still bringing to life and bringing the best out in people he interviewed. So I was thinking about that a lot. But you're right, Jim. It's something when radio kind of lost its goal, glossed out, and what isn't to moving pictures, right? Mm-hmm. Of course it's going to lose out. But we also lost our ability, I think, to be as creative and think creatively and use our own minds. It's kind of like reading, right?
You
read, it's certainly different than a movie. It's your own movie, your own interpretation.
Well, one thing people ought to do sometimes is listen to a sporting event on radio, whether it's a Broncos football team or whatever. But I don't have cable, you know, so I was kind of interested in the World Cup this last year, and so I tuned in to ESPN, and you talk about some talented sports broadcasters. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a talent that most people have no idea about, because you watch ESPN on TV, these blithering idiots are telling you what you probably thought you already knew because you watched it on TV.
Right. It's like, we'll hear some of that on the Masters, and I think the announcers, by the way, are very good. But you will hear some of that this weekend, right?
Yeah.
Oh, he missed the putt. No kidding. I just saw it go right by just like you did.
Yeah. Anyway, not much more to say, but I guess the stock market is still healthy.
Well, it seems to be healthier than the commentary about it, that's for sure. That's the amazing thing. I think people are just, I hear it every day. I literally hear it every day. Well, I've been reading. Everybody says the market's going to go down and have a correction. It's like, I haven't heard that for, well, let's see, I would say 365 days, but it's not. It's not 730 days either. It keeps going, right?
Well, in general,
year after year, we've been hearing this same commentary.
The thing is, money doesn't grow on trees, right? Okay, there's nothing, you know. I mean, there's no such thing as real easy money. Stock market itself can't just continually go up. There's got to be corrections and all that kind of thing.
Right, and there are, but you're not going to time them. That just stop it.
No.
Right? I mean, all those people who tried to time corrections in Apple, they're out. Billions and billions, hundreds of billions of market cap ago. They're out. And it's and you can't get back in because it's not like the thing got cut in half at any time in between. So, you know, and you can name company after company like that. You like the railroads, same story. You know, they can't keep growing. Their P.E. ratios are too high, and then they find out that the earnings are that good, and their P.E. ratios aren't that high, and they keep moving higher. I know they're having a little correction right now, Jim, but basically it's been a great investment for the last 10 years.
Well, as you know, Buffett is my nemesis. And not only with railroads, but since he bought Duracell, I went out and bought Energizer.
Right. Yeah. Yep, I got you.
Anyway, well, have a great weekend.
All right, Jim. Well, thank you, and keep thinking long term.
I always do. I'm,
yep.
According to my financial statement, my analyst thinks I'm supposed to live to 120.
Well, that's good.
So I guess that's
you might be all right.
I don't know if that's good or not. I don't know if I want to see the world in another, whatever, 30 years. But, you know,
it'll be different.
Yep.
We live in interesting times, Jim. Embrace what we have.
Take care.
All right. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And our number is 580-543-6580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We will be right back after Fox News.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. Money Matters with Dave Petso on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks again for joining us. Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. And our email is dave@petsofinancial.net. We've got plenty of time left in this program, so please do bring us up with your questions, comments. Obviously, we've been talking a lot the last couple of weeks about, well, benign neglect. Not just putting your head in the sand, but trying to think things through a little bit better, a little differently, right? But the world does move on, and there is innovation. And so let me balance that thought as we, you know, we played John Deal in that interview, and that was such a great day with John and listening to him talk about some of their aging studies and what people being able to stay in their homes in the long run because of technology. Well, this week the iWatch is coming out, right? And, of course, who needs an iWatch? Nobody. Who needs an iPhone? Nobody. But we discovered we really kind of did need it or really wanted it. I didn't know I wanted it until I really needed it. But coupling that is really, it's not a watch. I mean, it'll tell time, but so does my phone. So does a watch. But it won't tell me how my heart's doing. It's not going to measure my insulin level if I was diabetic. It won't allow me in my 90s to live in a home alone, because if I fall, nobody would know. But now with the watch on, it knows instantly and it calls. Or they will send somebody because my heart's acting up. It's a health device. It's going to be so much more than, this is Dick Tracy. I can make a phone call. I don't know what it's going to be, but I do know this. It's going to evolve. And it's going to be amazing. And it's going to be allowing people to do things that we couldn't do before. It'll allow people independence. It'll lead to other devices. Maybe smart floors so that the floor knows if you fell, if you're old, right? Who knows? But I do know it's fascinating. And all the pundits come out, we don't need it, and it's not really a big deal. It's hardly going to move the needle on Apple and all that stuff. And, of course, the consumer said, yeah, whatever you say, I want one. I'm sorry, but you're going to have to wait. We can't make them fast enough. I'm sure glad I got all these smart analysts telling me how the iPhone 4, 5 and 6 really aren't going to be a big deal. How the iPad wasn't really, I mean, that's silly. Who's going to buy iPads? And once they have iPads, who's going to upgrade? Who's going to upgrade is right. I guess about everybody did. I'm sure glad they're telling me that nobody's going to be buying the iWatch. It's just amazing. It's always negative all the time with all companies. And I don't know if it moves the needle on the stock. I'm excited about what it does for mankind. And the bottom line is it does move the needle on the stock with the apps and all the stuff that people are going to buy. I just think it's fascinating, and I can't wait to see what it looks like in a year from now. It's an interesting time, and innovation is just wild. It's just wild. And I know all of us, really, I get this. All of us want to slow down. I get that. Just catch our breath, right? It's not going to. It's not. It's not going to. So I think what we want to try to do is maybe look at it differently instead of I don't need it, or I don't want it, or I don't this or that. I think in many cases, none of us wants all this technology, unless it's going to save somebody that we love, unless it's going to enable somebody to live independently that couldn't before. Right? Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetzoFinancial.net. Well, I want and need your calls, so please do give us a call. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. Money Matters with Dave Petzo on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello and welcome back. Thank you for joining us. Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. Would love to visit with you. Right now, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Linda in Emmett. Linda, thanks for calling.
Good morning, Dave. How are you?
Good. Good, thank you. Wonderful.
I've got a story that maybe you'll give some other people a heads up before they lose everything. A friend of mine was married, and her husband was into a lot of tech stuff. And he convinced her to put all of her money into a mutual fund that was totally technical stuff. And
right,
when, when the bottoms fell out of the market in 01, actually, if I remember right, and all the tech stocks lost and everything, Silicon Valley kind of disappeared off the horizon, she lost everything. She lost all of her retirement. And to me, that's a good reason why you don't invest in just one thing. You take it and you put it like in no low risk and then medium, and then if you're really, you know, working there and getting the bucks together, then you go into the international stuff or bigger stocks, but you don't put all your eggs in one basket. And when she told me she had lost everything, I was sick to my stomach, because it's just, you know, it's like you don't do things like that. And this was not a dumb person, but she allowed somebody who she trusted to help her lose everything that she'd worked for.
Right. Well, it is, there's no question, and that's why I talked about this earlier, right, when I talked about benign neglect, and the fact of the matter is that, you know, with Fidelity's study, right, the people moving money back and forth over a decent market period of earning over 9%, investors earned less than
3%. Yeah.
They have to say, they couldn't possibly try to be that bad. It's impossible to be that bad. I mean, really. It's not possible to be that bad by trying. It's what people do with their emotions. They chase real estate in the mid, 2000s, right?
Yeah.
So in 06, people are flipping condos in Florida from Idaho. It's nutty behavior. It's no money down and just buy 17 houses and it'll be okay. It wasn't okay. It's not okay to buy gold at 2000 because everybody knows it's going to 3. It's not okay to buy silver at $40 or $50 an ounce because everybody knows it's going to 100. Everybody knew oil was going to go to 200 when it was at 100. And when it falls to 50, everybody knows it's going to 20 until it doesn't. It's this constant noise that drives people to make bad decisions. And they just think they have information in front of them when it's nothing more than data. It's just data, data, data. It's noise every day right at you. It's like you've got to buy this, you've got to sell this, you've got to go into tech stocks. And everybody knows if it's a new paradigm, it's all about eyeball views. Why Diversification's Dumb was the name of a book. It was. Diversification was dumb. Sold real well during that. Dividends Are Dumb was another book. You know what? Dividend paying companies. I mean, it's just absolutely nutty how we change. But we're allowed to. And so your friend, it is sad. But many, many smart people did exactly that.
Yeah.
And when you add leverage, nobody lost everything if they didn't have leverage, but many people did. And when you have leverage, you are at risk of losing everything.
Yep.
Linda, thank you so much for the heads up. I appreciate it.
Okay, Dave. Have a good day.
You
congratulations on becoming grandfather.
Thank you so much. Yes.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Delightful. Thank you. Thanks, Linda. And our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. Quick break, and we're going to come right back for our final segment. We've got plenty of time, so do give us a call or shoot us an email, dave@petzofinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. Money Matters with Dave Pezzo on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. Our final segment today. Plenty of time left today, of course, and let's go right to the phone. So let's go to Joe. Joe, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please. Joe?
Yeah, Dave?
Yes, there we go.
Sorry about that. Hey, I wanted to know what your opinion was. I'm currently with a firm, and I'm thinking about starting up with another one just as a checks and balances. I'm not sure if my mutual fund's performing the way it should be. So just
there's
what your opinion
is. You're in mutual funds with mostly mutual funds. Is that what you mean?
Correct.
Okay. There's a couple things. Let me refer you to one thing to kind of check if you're not sure. I think the first thing you do is just basically ask this question. I mean, if you're comfortable with your advisor now, go ask them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Talk to them. Hey, this seems like it's not doing very well. What do you think? And then you can take it from there. I would start there, right?
Correct.
But let me give you another reference you might think about, because a lot of times people aren't measuring correctly based on what your objectives are. So we're seeing a lot of money go into index funds called passive managed, and I'll talk more about that upcoming, because a lot of money is fleeing money managers because the last few years a passive index as measured only by the S&P 500 has done very well. Diversification has hurt returns, meaning anything you buy in emerging markets, right? So people like emerging markets because that's where a lot of the growth in the world is occurring. But it's been a bad investment for the last 3 to 5 years. So if anything you put there is dragging returns down. So we hear constantly that the managers can't keep up with the index. So you have to make sure you're really measuring against the right index. So, Joe, I would think if you want to, you can go to our website. And we've clipped a 20-minute monologue I did. It was the end of December, titled Why My Account Is Not Performing as Well as the Index.
Okay.
And I think it might help you understand how different indices are measured if that's the reason you think you're not doing well.
Well, I think I'm in some high-risk categories too, but, I look at the fund's performance over the, last 5 to 10 years, and it's a lot higher than it is currently. So, I don't know enough about it, but I just want to make sure I'm getting the best bang for my buck, and, my money's
absolutely
where it should be to grow.
And I think you should check, and that's okay if you go out and check somewhere else as well.
Hmm.
But I do know that that's a question that we've been answering and expect to answer, because there is a lot of noise out there, and there is a lot of money in motion moving from actively managed accounts into index funds, because people are giving up and saying, hey, look, why am I paying for this? Because it's not performing as well. And it can't. And so there's lots of academic studies that you can't do it. But as I've shared before, with a lot of data on one particular large group that has thousands and thousands and thousands of data points, they've actually beat the index consistently over periods of time. But that doesn't mean every year. It doesn't mean every 5 years.
Right.
But over time, and in very high percentages, they do. But we live in a world that sees, what did I do in 2014? Not, how am I doing from 2000 to now? What are you doing lately, kind of thing. So just make sure that you're measuring against the right thing. I would talk to your advisor. If you're comfortable with your advisor, if you're not, it's time to change. Okay? So a lot of comfort there.
All right. And that's kind of why, I have 4,000 to 5 that I was going to experiment with and pick another advisor just to see where he was at. And if he was doing better than the other one, I was going to transfer that money over from that fund over to him. But I'm not sure if that's a great idea or if I should put that extra 4,000 to 5,000 in the funds that I'm in already.
Yeah, Joe, let me talk about that next week. I hope you'll stick around. Unfortunately, I'm out of time, and I do want to do justice to that question, okay?
Okay, thank you, Dave.
All right, thank you, Joe. And thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a great weekend.